There's somebody that's been to Farm Novelties right there.
I was thinking the same thing.
Dottie, do you want to introduce our very special guest?
I would be happy to introduce her to you. This young lady was one of our culinary chef instructors in the Culinary Center at Oceana Cruises for about 4 years. She is a food stylist. She is a TV show and radio show host and guest, like she is today. She's a consultant to NPR Boston, magazine editor, TV producer, speaker. She is our chef, Annie B. Copps. Good morning, Annie.
Wait a minute, Annie. I have a little more. She's also the author of 2 cookbooks, A Little Taste of Cape Cod and Little Local Maine, and also the co-founder of The Readable Feast, a New England cookbook and food writing celebration. You are very, very busy. There you go. And she's a heck of a promoter, and for some reason, she's Groucho Marx's second wife.
Sorry, it's Monday, as you said, right? A girl's got to do what a girl's got to do. So first of all, I'm so happy to be with you all. And I know that there are a lot of folks listening and watching, fellow crew members and a lot of our guests whom, of course, I'm not with the ships anymore. But Dottie, I was with Oceana and Regent for 8 years.
Was it 8 years?
It was 8 years.
Why was I thinking?
Years of my life. I can never get back. No, I loved it.
Well, Annie, please meet BJ Odom. He is our radio industry veteran, 40-year veteran. Now he's doing this. And John Farentino, legendary comedy magician. And you know Tom.
I do know Tom.
And Annie, the reason we mentioned Farm Novelties, it's the other day we had on Warren, help me out with the last name.
Berkowitz,
who founded Farm Novelties, and one of their biggest selling items was that nose and glasses that you had on. So we wondered if you knew Warren in a previous life. So we started
that. But I love physical comedy. I love, what would you call this?
The Nosmo.
Yeah, exactly. I love stuff like that. But Dottie, I have to tell you, when I was listening to the news update, mm-hmm. it was just like the Daily Show on Marina and Riviera. Like all of a sudden, I was late for something. I was watching them and I'm like, oh shoot, I'm watching Dottie. I'm supposed to be in Horizons right now.
Get going.
Memories.
And by the way, Dottie, Steven Ellie Cuss, say hello. They were so excited that you're on the show and posted on Facebook a picture of them in your class.
I saw that this morning, and I have to say, the crew members that you meet working in the industry, and also the guests. I mean, the places that we got to go to, and the work we got to, that was great. But really, the connection to people that I really miss the most about ship life. And Ellie and Steve, they would go back and forth. They were either in Graham Dennison's art class or in the kitchen with me. And they always made beautiful food. And anytime they're bigger supporters. They're just lovely people in Southern California. So hi, Steve and Ellie.
They love you too.
I will now tell you a little bit of backstory there. I started this thing 5 months ago, I guess, just as a radio show by myself, promoted it on Facebook. They were listeners from day one. Considering there's a 3-hour time difference and the show's at 10, they were up at 7 in the morning. 2 weeks into it, John Farentino, who's a longtime friend of mine, came on as a guest and said, listen, I'm home, same as you are. I don't mind sitting in like Ed McMahon. And then we changed the name of the show to The Big Broadcast. Then eventually BJ Odom was doing radio, and that radio program went in a different direction. and so
That's happened to me. I understand.
He stopped by and never left. And eventually I dragged Dottie in. Dottie always did the Cruise and Travel News Update, but I got her to come in the show. Point of this story is, because I would get up at 4 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning to begin to prep for the show, by the time 10 o'clock came, it was 6 hours. So I figured if I get up at 8, it would be 2 in the afternoon, and it'd be lunchtime, and I like to have coffee and Zambuca. So I started having a coffee and Zambuca every day at 10 o'clock. Well, guess who had a coffee and Zambuca every day with me at 7 o'clock? Steven Ellie. Steven Ellie.
I'm drinking regular coffee, but only because it's Monday and there's a lot to get done today.
But I hear you. But they're very loyal to Zambuca and the show, and we appreciate that. So
I think Sambuca should be a sponsor.
Someone should be a sponsor, I'll tell you that. As many people have heard many times, our salaries are paid by the Social Security Administration. And
Exactly.
I got paid. You get paid, John? Check clear?
Okay. Everybody, I got paid.
The check clear.
Everybody got money. Dottie, do you have a question? You want to start? I have many questions.
Well, I wanted to say, I know that this is sort of a bob and weave, but what's really important, I'm not going to say who you should, but please vote.
Oh, yeah, without Absolutely. A doubt. Oh,
yes, that's all. That, yeah. And that's...
Yeah,
and I won't.
Well, we were just talking about early voting.
It's mostly it's mostly a Bob on this show. You're safe. It's not a Donald. It's not a Donald. I'm the weave, but I'm in the middle. I'm just somebody that looks at both sides, and that's hard to do anymore. You can't be in the middle. You can't be in the middle. You have to take one side or the other. It's crazy. But Dottie. You're right. We're voting today.
Yes, we are. Please. Doing a little reading on you, Annie. You worked with Julia Child as well, didn't you?
I did. And so you know Stephanie Hirsch, who is still with Oceana. So long story short, as if. So when I first started in restaurants here in the Boston area, she would come into the restaurants because I was very lucky. I worked in some very nice restaurants, and she would always come into the kitchen to say thank you. And I think that she loved that there was this, you know, big, tall, young woman in with all the boys. And she just always said, you know, if I can ever do anything to help you. So when I left restaurants and I was working on my graduate degree, she said, you know, if I can ever help you, well, you could call Julia Child. She was in the White Pages, J. Child. 876-1072, right in the phone book. So I called her up and I said, I mean, Mrs. Child, you know, this is Annie Copps. I don't know if you remember me. And she said, Dearie. Everybody was Dearie.
Yeah.
Dearie, of course I remember you. Please come over. And I went over to her house and we had a cup of tea. And she said, you know, what are you looking for? I said, well, I'm not looking for anything full-time, blah, 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 blah. They were just starting to shoot the Master Chefs series out of her home, where the chefs came in from all around the United States and were cooking in her home. And she said, we need help in the kitchen. And I said, great, I can do that. Her full-time executive personal assistant is Stephanie Hirsch. And Stephanie and I knew each other. Yeah, so Stephanie and I go way back. So it's so great. I'm glad. So glad that she's, you know, working for the ships, and she loves it. She loves it. Yeah. She loves it. She's a great teacher. Yeah. Really great. The whole team is really great.
Yeah.
Is it true that she asked you once if the guy was any good in bed?
She was so randy. Oh my gosh, she would. Jerry, now tell me about this young man that you're dating. Are you satisfied with your nighttime business? 89 years old.
That's hilarious. I've been reading up on you, and I'm looking at some of the questions that was asked. I believe it was Improper Boston. You were interviewed by someone anyway, and there's many questions in here, and they're curious because I asked John. We're air fryer people, but we're new at it. John has been an air fryer guy for a while. He makes bagels in his air fryer because he can't get good New York bagels. But you said don't bother with donuts because you just get donuts in the store, correct? There it is, the essential.
Wow.
I'm sending this to you and Dottie. Dottie and Tom, you're getting that because Dottie and I were talking about air fryers.
You'll never use it, you said.
So, no, the way I feel about donuts, I don't really have much of a sweet tooth. But with donuts, the work and effort that goes into making a good donut and then all the oil that you have to use, maybe they can do them in your air fryer. Just assume buy one.
Yeah, I agree.
What am I going to do with two dozen donuts?
If you send us that cookbook, that means you're down to 999, according to the interview I'm looking at. Because they asked Annie how many cookbooks. She goes, 1,000. Got about 1,000.
That was my question.
Yeah.
John. I have a tendency to be a little bit of a hoarder anyway. And then when it comes to cookbooks, I worked as a magazine editor for many years as the food editor, two different magazines. And so I would get lots of books. I run a cookbook contest, New England cookbook writing contest, as well. So, and then I buy them, and I have a storage unit that has probably 40 boxes, and there's cookbooks in them.
Wow.
I mean,
It's a very cool looking kitchen you have there with the red and black.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's very cool.
It's not a it's not a virtual background.
No, you'll see the cat running back and forth.
Oh, okay.
That is very cool.
Thank you. I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky.
Why did you go into the culinary field, Annie?
Completely by accident. My mother, I come from a big eating family, and we traveled a lot as a family. And, you know, my parents always made us eat what the local foods were. My mom, for a brief time, had kind of a catering business. It wasn't, she would sort of for neighbors and friends and that sort of thing. So food was always an important part of my life. Mm-hmm. But I was my senior year of college. I was at Boston University, and I had this big plan that I was going to go to Middlebury and study languages and teach languages in a small New England college and have Labrador retrievers and, you know, knit sweaters. And I got a job in a restaurant my senior year in college and got sucked in. And it was Michaela Larson owned the restaurant. It was called Michaela's. Todd English was the executive chef there. I don't know if you know Todd.
Yes, but
he had Olive's restaurants. And he was just coming up. A woman named Barbara Lynch, who's the only female woman Relais and Chateau chef in America. And it was this all-star team of, 21-year-olds.
Yeah.
And I just got a job there. And Michaela said, you keep talking that you want to go to graduate school. Give me a year of your, I think that you've got the bug. And if you want to go to graduate school, I'll pay for the first semester. That's how much I think you really want to be in the food industry. And she was right. I ended up working with her for about 5 years, then went to culinary school. I'm old.
Yeah. which school did you go to?
I actually did the Boston University culinary program, which I was, Stephanie Hirsch got her master's from that program.
Okay, very cool.
She did.
I see that you're a co-founder of the Readable Feast.
Yes.
With all of the recipes on the internet now and all the blogs about food and everything else, are cookbooks still a staple? Do people, I know you have them, do people still collect them? I mean, we find ourselves, if we want a recipe, we just go on the internet and put in whatever, chicken cacciatore for dummies. And Dottie makes an amazing chicken with peppers. She kind of created her own. Question is, they're still popular. People still buy them, still collect them.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So yes, absolutely, cookbooks are still vital and they're important. And I think a lot of times, almost like when people watch the Food Network, maybe even if they don't even cook, they still enjoy watching these programs. But I think a good cookbook tells a story along the way, so that if it's a recipe for chicken cacciatore, they'll tell you the story of cacciatore, the hunter's wife, and what does or doesn't make it. Here are some tricks that you can do. But one of the reasons that we did start the Readable Feast is that it's a really big labor of love to write a cookbook. And no one except for Rachel Ray and Ina Garten are making any money doing it.
Yeah.
So we wanted to, with the Readable Feast, first highlight and help the authors sell some books and say, this is a difficult thing. You should pay more attention to regional cooking and what it takes to write a book. So that's why we started it, was really to help sell more books for these authors.
It's a good thought, the idea that there's actually a story behind the recipe. It's
absolutely
not just a recipe. You're reading a story about how it came about. And those are your two cookbooks?
Sorry. I didn't mean to do that. That was
You keep doing it.
I slipped. I slipped. I'm sorry.
No, there must be a lot of seafood recipes in those, right?
They are. Can I swear on this?
Kind of, not really.
Would you rather I didn't?
Yeah, we only on Fridays at 11:45 when we have a guy named Jackie Martland on. We try to keep him corralled, but without some kind of tranquilizer, it's virtually impossible. But you're welcome to do whatever you want.
Okay, you're beep out of luck if you don't like seafood. There are very few non-seafood recipes in these books.
Yeah, shit out of luck.
I love seafood. I love seafood.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I'm going to bet there's a good lobster roll in there.
Yeah. Or and BJ did the I'm on a seafood diet.
Yeah.
Every time.
There you go. He's a comedian, too. part-time radio, part-time comic, and part. He's BJ. We tell everybody when they come on, so they can go, wow, he's a heart transplant and a kidney transplant survivor, and he's still here. 17 and a half years ago, they gave him a new heart. And
wow.
Yeah, see?
You got more parts than a chicken McNugget, let me tell you.
Cornell, that's that's a new one on us. We're getting he's breaking out the A material for you, Andy. We get the B material.
I appreciate it.
We always ask your go-to, and I was looking at this interview again, and carbonara does come up quite a bit because I guess it's in the refrigerator. There's usually enough stuff laying around to be able to whip up a carbonara.
There should be. Yeah. Any eggs, Parmesan, and pig jowls, guanciale is traditional, but you could use bacon, like as long as it's not like maple cured bacon. And well, I guess that might even be good. Who's the spam lover?
BJ's a spam lover.
Spam carbonara. Delicious.
Yeah, but in the air fryer. Spam.
I don't want to say that Tom's not much of a cook, but he asked me before we went on whether you can make soup in an air fryer.
But Tom, no.
He said, would you cook it on your barbecue grill?
I am actually a halfway decent cook, just not in an air fryer. I'm learning about that air fryer. We had a guy come on, Craig Mitchell, who was type 2 diabetic, and his A1A was astronomical, just crazy.
The charts.
Yeah, and he bought an air fryer and taught himself how to cook low carb, using an air fryer, and now he's not even on medicine anymore. He's took it
down. Wow.
He took it down to whatever your A1A.
He lost 92 pounds.
He lost 92 pounds.
92 pounds?
Yeah, well, that was an amputation. But otherwise, just kidding. He's a good guy, too. So he got us talking about it. I never heard of an air fryer. I didn't know what it was. So now we have one.
Do you know that there are 7 million air fryers in use? As of March. And so I would assume that with the COVID situation we found ourselves in, I'm sure even more have sold. And I didn't understand. I was like, air fryer, air schmeyer, who needs that garbage? It's like the dumbest idea. Well, just fry it. And then I had some stuff that came out of the air fryer. I'm like, oh, I'm listening now.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems easier, and I don't have to go out and do much grilling, because I'm not very good at that either.
The grill's broken, too.
Yeah, so. I broke the grill on top of that.
The grill's broken. B, you're not good at
I'm not even good when it's working. So
you need those Bluetooth thermometers for your phone for grilling, man.
Oh, those are really great. And you know what, John, that's a really good point. And I think that, Dottie and Tom, when you get back onto the ships, you have to take the grilling class because it really will help you with, there's a science to grilling. And people who go, I can touch it with my finger or 10 minutes per side, that's all baloney. You have to take the temperature. That's the only way you know. The only way you know. You can touch it and say, it's more or less cooked, but you don't know what the internal temperature is, and the internal temperature never lies. Yeah. You know, if it's a steak and it's 120 degrees,
rare.
It's not rare.
Now, here's the thing, Annie. I actually have a digital thermometer that I use. John has them so he can be in the house sitting down and keeping an eye on the phone so he doesn't have to hang around the grill. So if it's raining, if it's raining, he doesn't worry about it. He just runs out in between the drops to grab the steak and run back in again. So,
that's funny. I love to grill, and of course we do get a lot of snow here. So one of the first things we do is we shovel out the pathway to the grill. Yeah. And to have a thermometer that we can put inside a pork shoulder and then go inside the house.
Yeah.
And wait.
It's
not 30 degrees is very helpful.
I've never had a pork shoulder. What does it taste like? Pork.
Well,
pork.
Oh, you've had pork shoulder a million times. Pulled pork is usually pork shoulder.
Oh, okay.
And it's sometimes it's called the Boston butt, which is it is the shoulder. Uh-huh. And that comes from these containers that they used to put them in. It doesn't matter. But yeah. You've had pork shoulder, and it's a tough, right? It's a joint. So it's a tough piece of meat that is perfect for braising. Yeah. So all that connective tissue gets all melty and delicious and
BJ, BJ, have you ever made a pork shoulder?
Never made one, but I've ate plenty.
Okay.
Yes, you have. Yeah, if you have barbecued, you've had pork shoulder.
That's right. And the temperature
is so important when you're cooking fish. What? Because fish, especially like swordfish, like I said this before, swordfish never looks like it's done. So you end up overcooking it unless you know 140. Boom.
Yeah. And fish, something like salmon has some fat in it, good, really good fat, all those omega-3s and really right. good fat in it. And you can undercook salmon. I actually like my salmon a little bit undercooked. But the other fish, like a swordfish or tuna, these really, really, you overcook that,
it's
nasty.
It's
very unpleasant.
I saw on the NPR site that I didn't listen to, but you had a podcast about cooking local cuisine during the pandemic. What was that? That was more lobster rolls?
Well, lots of lobster rolls. And so that was on WGBH. We have two NPR stations here. Because we're so intellectual.
That's
here.
Very nice. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
But it was about cooking during the pandemic. And we're really walking, like the voting thing, we're walking a very strange line, not just here in Boston, but all over America, where we want to support, we want to become better cooks because we're spending so much more time at home because it's still a little bit scary to be outside. Yeah. But we want to support our restaurants. And, you know, if we lose our restaurant community, it's not just, it's fun to go out to eat. But the economic and the community loss, it's huge. Mm-hmm. So many jobs. And, you know, and it's people who are, in a lot of cases, are sort of in financial distress anyway. And again, it's much colder up here. So right around early December, we're not going to be able to eat outside with heaters and blankets. It's just going to, it's going to be so.
I'm not familiar with Massachusetts at the moment with restrictions. I know that New Jersey opened up indoor dining to 25% or 30%. New York is still not. I think they're still only outdoors. Is Massachusetts or Boston still only outdoor dining?
We are 40% indoor dining. I believe it's 40% indoor dining. But I don't want to be a dark cloud. But our numbers are going up.
Yeah, well, they're going up. But we talk about this. We don't do a lot of that kind of discussion because there's no.
You did us not.
Well, yeah. Just now we can do it, but I just checked the deaths because that's the only. I hate to say it that way, but that's the only really barometer you have. Testing our testing. We're about 4.5% positive testing. That hasn't changed. We're just testing more, so cases are going up. But so far, but then there's that other school that tells you, well, you won't see those for another month or another 2 weeks, another 4 weeks, 6 weeks. First, they have to be hospitalized, but no one tells you about that. You can't seem to find out who's hospitalized. And then, so I just look at the, like, as you get older, you look at obituaries anyway. See if you know anybody. So.
And Tom, you're very old.
I just drink bleach and go where I want.
There you go. There's it.
I have a question for Annie from one of our Facebook fans. What is the best digital thermometer available that you use?
I think they're called ThermoPens. Yes, ThermoPens, and they're great. Yeah, you open them up and you stick them in. You have to take whatever it is that you're checking the temperature of, either off the grill or out of the oven or out of the frying pan, and put it in horizontally into the center of whatever it is that you're trying to get the temperature of. Because if you try and do it while it's in the pan, you're going to get you're going to get the heat of the pan or the grill or the
I didn't know that. I usually do it while it's in the pan.
Well, there you learn something new, Tom, pretty much every day.
Yeah, for me it's every minute. Forget day. At least.
How do you, if you forgot something and you hear it again, you're like, oh, I didn't know that. But you did know that. You just forgot that you knew that.
That's usually out my excuse.
See, I don't know how that Bluetooth temperature thing works then, because you put it in on the grill. But when you take it off on the grill, it's still the same temperature. So they must compensate for it.
That's different. That you leave in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're getting the internal temperature of the thermometer inside the piece of the meat.
Right.
Yeah. But how Bluetooth works? Is that your question?
No. What I'm saying is you're saying if it's on the grill, you're getting the heat of the grill.
Oh, so if you, because you, well, I had to think.
You know what I'm saying?
That. Yeah, I guess at the grill, you wouldn't have to take it off, but you would have to take it out of the oven and out of the pan. You're right.
Right. Okay.
Because, I stand corrected.
No, I wasn't trying to correct you. I was just trying to figure it out whether I was doing it wrong. I was trying to figure out if I was doing it wrong.
I was more afraid that you were asking me how Bluetooth worked, and I was actually trying to make something up, and I got nothing. No, but you're right. I think that on the grill, but if it was a steak on the grill, you would have to take off because you'd burn yourself, you know?
Right. It's okay. But what's your? I do have to ask you. We have to run in a minute because we're going.
No. I'm not leaving.
Well, you can stay.
I'm not leaving.
I don't know if you ever sailed with Victor. Dottie, say the last name because I get it wrong.
Say so.
General manager. He's zooming in from Portugal, and we're going global this week. We have Luka Kristovic on Thursday from Croatia, and we have Chris Ritchie on tomorrow from England, and we have you from Boston. This last time we checked, Massachusetts is still part of the union. But what's your problem with kale? I'm reading here that you think kale is overrated. I'm just being a wise guy.
No, it's good, and I'm glad you asked that question. I actually like kale, but I don't like it that much, and I feel like kale a few years ago was everywhere. Like I don't want to drink kale in a smoothie.
Yeah.
I don't want it in my desserts.
I hate kale.
I don't want kale chips.
I don't know what it is.
I like kale soup. I like, you know,
it's the weeds, Tom.
I put kale in my chili sometimes. But I mean, I think I made a joke that kale got a publicist because I mean
you
really,
did. It's funny.
It has no place in a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'm sorry.
They put it in everything.
Everything. Everything. And honestly, when I saw that in a smoothie, I'm like, no.
All right. And lastly, tell us about the microplane grater. We don't have one.
Hang on a second.
All right. Hang on, Victor. We'll go over with you. Don't go anywhere. Can he hear us when he's in the waiting room? I think he can.
I don't know.
All right. We better bring him in
Did
quick.
Did you see that I was wearing pajama bottoms?
No, but that's right. John's wearing his boxer shorts.
I
dressed from the top up. So this is a microplane grater. And it came, I think, from the woodworking shops. It's originally a Rasp.
Yeah, right? That's what it looks like.
So some smart person put a handle on it, and it's great for Parmesan cheese, but I use it for garlic and ginger. I don't chop either of those things anymore. I'm done with it. And you just do it right over the bowl or the pot that you're stirring, and you just get you get all the juice from the garlic. And you know, a garlic press is great, but then you have to clean out the garlic press. And that you think you've got it clean, and then a week later you're like, what's that smell? It's the garlic press because you didn't get all, even if it has the cleaner in it. So
there it is. And that's
there
also,
it is.
It's
there
also
it is.
Good in the summer if your door is sticking. You just take it down the side of the door, and the door opens and closes without a problem at all. It's a very.
I think that this is what they use for a pedicure too.
Oh.
Yeah, I think different ones. The ones for the kitchen, ones for the salon.
You can bake it in a cake.
Yeah. Good in prison.
Ooh, fiber.
Annie,
well, we are going to put up the links to Annie's cookbooks on our website. Yes. So if you go to the Friends of the Big Broadcast.
Yes. Yep. And anytime you want to join us, we'd love to have you. You're a wonderful guest. And I won't talk as much. But it always happens. It always happens. A half an hour is not long enough. But we hate to take up people's time for more than a half an hour. But anytime you want to join us, please do. We'll bother you again anyway if you want to come on. And I'm sure that all the Oceania people that went to school with you enjoyed having you on board. And we'll see.
Thank you.
We have to make room. He's a general manager. You know, you know how that works. You got to make room for the GM. That's the way it goes. But if I want to get a better stateroom someday, I better kiss some butt. That's the way it works out. Stay safe. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you. And nice to meet BJ and John. And Donnie and Tom, miss you both.
Miss you too, Annie. Thank you so much. What a great guest. Bye-bye. Thank you.